Okay. What's going on, Bourne family? Welcome to Bourne to Talk, episode number 20. We finally broke that big 2-0. I'm super stoked about this, and we couldn't have a more exciting guest for you today. So tonight I'm joined by an incredibly strong individual, somebody who is very humble, down to earth, and just genuinely very, very friendly. Many of you may know him already, many of you may not. He's a powerlifter, he's in a band. I guess if you put the two together, we've got like a very, very strong rocker with us tonight. Tonight I'm joined by the incredibly strong, and like I mentioned, incredibly friendly, Ben Rice. Ben, how are you, sir?
I'm doing all right. Hello, friends.
Thank you so much for being on. I've been super excited for this one. I know there's been so many requests for Ben Rice on this podcast. It's been insane. So I'm glad that we could finally do it. So, Ben, for the aforementioned people who don't know who you are, would you like to introduce yourself, give us some background into what you do, who you are, that kind of thing?
Sure. As said, my name's Ben Rice. I am a powerlifter. I have been lifting for quite a while. I've been pursuing physical improvement through training for about 17 years. I've been powerlifting specifically for a little over 10. I coach full-time. That's what I do. That's what I love to do. This sport is something I've kind of centered my life around. I went to school, though, for music, specifically vocal performance, through my university career, and I am now in an a cappella group as well, so I kind of get this unique opportunity to share my passions with other people, the passions of lifting heavy things and overcoming personal challenges through physical strength training, as well as sharing my love for music with other people. So that's pretty much me.
That's so awesome, dude. Like, and speaking of the coaching, you, am I right in thinking that you coach Mark McQueen?
Yes.
Is that correct?
Mark,
so who's going to be IPF champion, what, 11 days, is it?
Well, we need him to make sure he executes, but he's definitely he's in a really good spot going to Worlds in Belarus next week.
Absolutely. That kid is incredibly strong. It's so incredibly strong, but incredibly nice. So, Ben, before we get into the nitty-gritty of the interview, do you want to bang us some numbers over? People seem to love the numbers in powerlifting, so we'll if we get some numbers out of the way.
Okay. Well, in terms of numbers that I've hit in actual USAPL or IPF affiliate competitions, 650 squat, 750 deadlift, 380-pound bench press in non-USAPL or IPF affiliated contests, 705 squat with wraps, 392 press, and 760 deadlifts. But I've hoping to really improve some of those numbers. I got a meet coming up in a couple of weeks and getting ready for also the U.S. Raw Nationals coming in up in October, and I plan on adding to all those numbers. So
that's going to be awesome to see. So let's you mentioned going into this meet in a couple of weeks. How do you kind of, perfect timing, I guess, but how do you prepare for that? Obviously, we know that powerlifters, they increase their strength through the training in the off season. Then when it comes down to a meet, loads start getting heavier, like volume tends to come down in terms of reps and sets and etc. But how do you prep both physically and mentally for a meet, let's say, like as you are right now, a couple of weeks out?
Well, I'm fortunate enough that I do have a couple of coaches. My coaches, Eric and Hanny, are both they work at TSA, or the Strength Athlete, which is Bryce Lewis's coaching and strength company, I guess. And so they handle a lot of my own programming, and it is really, in terms of physically, it's pretty much what you just described, and that's kind of how I take my athletes to it. The loads tend to remain high or trend up a little bit. The volume of the work is coming down. The focus shifts a little bit from training being kind of beating yourself into the ground and forcing that growth to kind of, you have to be a little bit more careful. Little niggles and things that may end up adding up where you're, if something kind of hurts, if it's in the middle of a training block, you know, if you have some pain somewhere, you're dealing with little overuse injuries or types of things, you can sometimes push through it. But the closer you get to a meet, the biggest thing is to not break on the way in there. And that's I had Mark take his heaviest his heaviest or his last heavy deadlifts yesterday going into the meet about a week out, and he asked me, because we're using an RPE system, a rate of perceived exertion, where I didn't give him a specific number. I gave him kind of a range of the effort that he should be doing, and he messaged me and said, you know, I think these may be a little conservative, and I said, that's exactly what we want. It's better to be conservative coming in and go in healthy and being able to push yourself instead of kind of burning out beforehand. And I think that in terms of mental preparation, it is kind of a weird spot to be in, because there's always this battle between your expectations of what's realistic and kind of a healthy outlook and a healthy approach as to, am I going to be looking at specific numbers that I want? What are my goals for the meet? Am I trying to win the meet? What size, is it a big meet? Is it like a national level meet, or is it a smaller local meet where you have a little bit more flexibility in terms of kind of what your performance could be, I guess. If you go to a national level meet, you kind of have to be a little bit tighter in the attempt selection. You have to factor in more who else is going to be there. How has their training been looking? Do you know about what their training's been looking like? Do you have any, is the goal to win? Is the goal to put up kind of the best that you possibly can do on that day? Or is it just to play it safe and maybe sandbag it a little bit if that's going to put you in a better position for placement instead of kind of YOLOing and potentially missing lifts that should be there.
Yeah.
So for me personally, I like to approach each meet as the whole idea of winning or losing is a little less important to me. I've done plenty of meets and won plenty of meets, and the excitement of winning is not really what pushes me anymore. It's more about fighting and clawing for any little bit of improvement. And so whenever I go to a meet, my mental state is I want to beat the last version of myself, and I want to make sure that I can get as close as possible as aligning my expectations to the reality of what my capabilities are. And so sometimes that it's easier said than done, but that's usually what my goal is and my focus is.
I think it's you're damn right. It is easier said than done. I think as powerlifters, we always just as people in general, I think, but everyone always wants more, don't they? Always, and especially when you're chasing numbers for powerlifting, you're constantly like, oh no, I can do that. When you might not be able to, but like you said, you have these expectations of yourself, and it's incredibly disappointing if you don't hit them, I think. But like you said, like, you've got a lot of experience there. So let's say, what was it? 10 years? You said you've been powerlifting.
The first meet that I have, I keep looking up to the left because I have some trophies up here. I think the first trophy I got was in 2006, and I know that I didn't earn a trophy in my first powerlifting meet, so probably 2005.
Oh, okay.
Would be the first time that I would have competed.
So that's a lot of years. I mean, obviously we see a lot of people now that have kind of come into powerlifting in the last few years. They're incredibly strong, but you've got like that track record of being in it for a long time. You have a hell of a lot of knowledge. So what would you say is one of the biggest thing that you've learned in powerlifting, both what it's taught you as a character yourself, but also what you've learned legitimately in the sport? So you had someone new coming into the sport, for example, what would you say to them is the biggest thing you've learned?
Well, I would, I guess the thing that I would want to kind of let somebody know when they're coming in is that you have to make sure that you're doing it for reasons that make sense, in a long-term perspective, because if you're doing it just to win, you literally have no control over that. And I think that you have to enjoy the journey. You have to enjoy the process of seeking strength specifically and seeking improvement. Because at a certain point, and I don't think people recognize this when they're starting out. I don't think they really recognize it until they start to hit the point in their progression where progress in general becomes just, you have to fight tooth and nail for for diminished returns. And at that point, it can't be about just what you feel like doing. And it comes down to making choices about the person that you want to be and the way that you approach it. And I would say always root your value and your worth and your expectation into your effort, because that is the one factor you can control. You can't control your genetics. You can't control how your potential. You can't control how good you possibly are capable of getting. The only thing that you have any control of is how much you are willing to work and the amount of commitment to that effort that you have. And so going into meets, going into training sessions, going into everything, if you're linking your worth and you're linking your expectations to the result of that thing, you don't have as much control of that as you might wish that you had. Someone else could show up that just has you outclassed by all. So if winning is the goal of, and you go to a meet and someone shows up you've never heard of and they're just objectively much better on their worst day, they could beat your best day. If your expectation is tied to winning as the only thing that you can find any fulfillment or gratification from, then that's going to always be up to someone else in that. But if you link your worth and your expectations to making the choice to work as hard as you can, then regardless of the result, regardless of the outcome, regardless of what level you're able to reach throughout the process, then you always have that as your meter of, did I work hard? Yes, I did. Well, then I can walk away knowing that I couldn't have done anything else. Because the doubt and looking back on things that you wish you would have changed, you wish you would have done, it's way more healthy and it's way more of a holistic view, in my experience, to link your worth to your work ethic. And I think that's, in general, just from start to finish, that can carry through, and it gets way more important as you get better and as the progress becomes way harder to come by.
Absolutely, yeah. It's funny, isn't it, like hearing you say that. I mean, you could look at some of the top level lifters, and someone from the outside that doesn't quite understand why we do this would be like, well, why are you even bothering? Like, you're having to do things you might not necessarily enjoy just to get better. But I think that's one of the reasons I love powerlifting. You have to do things you don't enjoy. You have to do things you're weak at if you want to get stronger. And obviously that translates to life as well. But I think you're right. The one thing that you can control always is that variable of hard work. Now, like you mentioned, if you put everything that you've got into something, you can walk away happy. Now, I used to play basketball at a pretty high level. And for me, I was always one of those people. I was like, I'm not going to lose. Like, I don't lose. I hate it. So I would always, if we'd lost a game, that was like the worst thing for me. I'd have a few days where I'd just beat myself up. It wasn't necessarily my fault, but some things, like you said, are out of your control. You don't know what's going to happen on any given day. But I think that really messed with my head quite a bit. It really made me struggle. But going through therapy now, one of the things that I've learned is to just be satisfied knowing that I gave everything my all. And you know what? In a bizarre way, it's really exhilarating to feel like that, because there's no pressure anymore.
Yeah, I think that from a sports psychology standpoint too, it's okay to be upset after a loss. And when it's one thing to use it as a way to evaluate your process, because there might have been decisions that you could have made, right, that could have put you in a better position. But I think where the distinction, the important part of that, is that you take what you can from the experiences, you take what you can in whatever can be constructive, and then you have to let the rest go. If something was out of your control, dwelling on the things that you couldn't control, however valid those might be, isn't constructive. It's not conducive to improving yourself for the next time. And approaching it kind of from a long-term view of saying that even I will have performances where I fail. I will have times where I'm not able to match up to what I believed that I could do. Did I learn from those experiences? Were there factors that were out of my control? If if I can learn from it, then I can grow from it. And it was just a training opportunity, even in a competitive setting. I have grown from this experience and can become stronger from it and better prepared for the next time and more. I have another experience to add. It's another rep in my life set of the work that I'm putting in. And I can't tell someone, because it won't work, to say, oh, just ignore that feeling of disappointment or just ignore it. But it's okay to recognize that it exists, but not let it control you, to recognize it and be accepting of the things that you can't control, and then make value-based decisions on how you're going to proceed. Because if I was telling you to never be upset about losing, that's not realistic. Sometimes people are very competitive, and they're, however much you tell someone that you shouldn't worry about a loss, that doesn't help a whole lot if someone feels bad in a situation. But the way that they can approach it is, you know, what can I take away from this? What can I control? All right, that's what I'm going to focus on now. And I'm going to take the negative emotions with that. I'm going to take the stuff that kind of comes along the baggage and try not to dwell on it. It can be there, and I can recognize that it exists, because good luck trying to ignore it when it's there. But don't put your focus solely on that. Shifting your focus into what you can control and what you can improve and what you did take away from the experience will generally allow you to move on and get back to working to progress again, instead of just being stuck in non-constructive with just beating yourself up.
And I think that's it, isn't it? Like, this you mentioned right at the end there, and that's something I just wanted to touch on quickly, was that you can get stuck in that kind of little circle where you start out, obviously, like, I should have done this, which then leads to, well, I might not be good enough, which then keeps going around in circles and circles, and you don't get anywhere. You don't progress then, like you just mentioned. And I think it's very important, going back to what you said about the life set, like, all these experiences, in the grand scheme of things, powerlifting really isn't that important. It's just something that we care about. Like, at the end of the day, your survival, your health is the most important thing, but people are willing to... which I get, I understand the passion, I completely do, because I was the same with basketball, but people are willing to put themselves in a position where their health is compromised. And I think that's the point where you've got to reevaluate things and start to look at them and think, well, maybe I need to start doing things a little bit differently, or even just change my mindset so that I can utilize that loss to then analyze and find out what I did wrong or where I can improve, like you mentioned, as opposed to just beating yourself up about it.
Right. Well, and I think something that's also important kind of to touch on and make sure is that at a certain point in any one particular pursuit, there is an inherent imbalance that comes with it. You can't be the best that you can be at any one thing without kind of giving up some balance in other places of your life.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't necessarily mean that you're not, that it can't exist within a life that has wellness. There's a bit of a difference there, but when someone's trying to do something else, like if using powerlifting as the example, saying I want to be the best powerlifter, the one, you know, the top 0.00001% of competitors, I want to find my absolute best on this thing. That person can't also be the best marathon runner in the world. There is an imbalance that comes with excellence. The more time and commitment you spend in any one direction, the less you have available to work on other things. And so the better you get, the more intentional you have to be about how you distribute your mental energy and your physical energy and your emotional energy. And so I'm always hesitant when people talk about kind of wanting to, I don't want to come off as egotistical, but when someone says, well, I want to do what you've done, I want to structure my entire life around the sport, I always try to remind them that the sport itself isn't the thing. It's the journey, and that's why I stress that you have to love the process.
Yeah.
And you're very right when you say that powerlifting itself, it's just, you're just lifting weights. There's three lifts. I'm going to pretend to sit in an invisible chair. No, I'm just kidding. I'm going to pretend to lay down and squish myself. No, just kidding.
Yeah.
I'm going to pick that up. I'm done picking it up. I'm going to put it down. That's really what it is.
Yeah.
But the value comes from how you approach it and the way that it can help you deal with the other things in your life, like approaching a challenge, something I can't currently do, maybe something that I can't ever see myself being able to overcome, working on it for long enough. No one, even the people who are the best at powerlifting, can't reach their own potential immediately. Mm-hmm. They have to work to it. So their starting point may be higher. They may have those genetic advantages. They may have more of a sport background or something that gives them a little bit of an advantage when they're starting in this. But to reach their own highest potential, it is going to take a commitment over time. And yeah. So that I think that the acceptance of that is really important. And focusing on wellness is really important too, because with greatness and excellence in anything comes some intrinsic imbalance, and you have to be more careful when you get better at something that you don't lose that.
For sure. And I think it almost, I think everyone that has done well at something has an obsessive attitude. Whether it's, I'm not saying it's a negative attitude at all, but you kind of have to become obsessive to become the best at something. Because I think, obviously, don't get me wrong, you can still enjoy your life, you can still have that balance in your life, but like you mentioned, there are things that you have to sacrifice, and there are things that you have to do in order to be the best. But if you're willing to do that, then it's just something you do, isn't it? Like, you don't even question it, you just kind of, you get on with it. So, mm-hmm. I think, just touching on the thing you said about wellness now, I hope you don't mind, Ben, but your Instagram, you've talked openly about having, like, your own demons that you struggle with.
Of course.
And I'm curious, would you mind just, I'm not asking you to go into detail, but would you mind just like highlighting what those demons might be for people that are listening?
Oh, I don't mind going into detail. I made the commitment a while ago to kind of put myself out there as a pseudo public figure, in terms of I've got my YouTube channel, and I try to be open and transparent about stuff that I'm struggling with, because I don't think it does a whole lot of good for me personally to try and share the messages that I'm sharing and the ideas and the thoughts if I'm being dishonest with people about kind of where I'm coming from. Some of my biggest challenges usually come with being conscientious and consistent. I tend to have a pretty imaginative mind. I tend to be pretty creative when it comes down to different ideas or thoughts, and I've got a million things running through my head at any one time. Some of the things where I struggle the most is I'll have an idea of something that I want to carry through, but then I'll get distracted. I do have ADHD. I've been diagnosed with that, and have been kind of dealing with it all my life, but have been dealing with it with the help of medication for the last few years. And one of the ways that manifests in my life is that my mind is constantly seeking stimulation, and there are certain things where trying to settle in and focus on getting something done, particularly tasks that I'm not as mentally stimulated by, my brain, the chemical imbalances are seeking stimulation everywhere. And so I have a very high tendency to drift in my focus, where I'll sit down and try to be committed to doing something and will not catch myself going off on these other trains of thought, and it makes it very difficult at times to be productive. There are some things where, like the lifting, I've been able to systematize it in a way so that I know if it's a training day, I don't have to worry about whether or not it's going to get done, because I'm not asking, it's not a question of am I going to do this today, it's in there. It's the one thing that I know that I can get done, even if I don't feel like doing it, even if no matter what the circumstances are. But there are other things where if I have a tendency to say, oh, I can get to it tomorrow, if I push it back, sometimes I'll get kind of anxiety about those things that I need to do, usually with organizational type things, usually with it made it one heck of a time getting through my university studies, where it's, oh, I got to register for classes. I'll send that email tomorrow. I don't really feel like doing it right now. And sometimes I become kind of paralyzed by my own perfectionism, where I want to do the thing right. And so I have a tendency to try and wait for the right time to do it. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes that's not going to happen. And so I found a way to fix it with the lifting. It doesn't matter if I feel like doing it or not. I'm going to do the thing, and there's not anything that's going to stop me from that training session. And trying to link other things in my life to the same level of priority in terms of this will get done no matter what, has been a struggle, and it's something that I have to actively kind of combat every single day and work on the entire time. It does not come easily or naturally to me.
No, and that's, I'm really glad that you don't mind speaking about that, and I understand that chase for like perfectionism, because there's so many situations in my life where I've maybe caused an argument or something's screwed up because I've tried to make something perfect. And we all know that physically you can't make anything perfect. So mm-hmm. I completely understand that. Now, you mentioned earlier about discussing things and how you find that it's helpful to discuss things. So there's a lot of people, I think, in powerlifting, not necessarily like, let's say, new generation, so like the youngest, but the older generation, mm. where they might not be so prepared to talk about things that bother them, because mm-hmm. powerlifting is really manly and you have to be really masculine and strong. So because don't get me wrong, talking about things, no matter how big it is very courageous. It takes a hell of a lot of bravery, and I will never ever not say that to someone. Like, if you're prepared to talk about something that's bothering you, that takes a lot of balls, and I don't care who it is or how big it is. So where did that courage come from? Is it just something that kind of happened, or did that come from lifting, or
I think there's a freeing aspect in feeling like you can be honest with your situation, mm-hmm. and it kind of comes back to acceptance. If there's parts of it that you don't have as much control over, holding on to it and just beating yourself up about it doesn't improve your situation. Mm-hmm. And so in my experience anyway, being able to have those, I think maybe I'm pivoting here a little bit, but the kind of the rise of social media, something that I see happening a lot is people are only getting a glimpse of someone else's highlight reel of their life. Exactly. And this idea where the comparison of saying people tend to feel more isolated. They tend to feel like their solitude or their sadness is a deeply unique experience, and that they're the only ones who maybe feel this way. Mm-hmm. And that's not the case. No. Everyone has a different level of, everyone has something that they're going through. And again, it's not to say I would never discount someone else's struggles. And it's not a comparison in terms of like, oh, well, we all have it tough, so you shouldn't worry about it. We all have it tough, so we should all be a little bit more understanding and patient with one another, to understand that we all have something. Mm-hmm. And even if someone else's struggle is maybe like objectively more intense, it doesn't diminish the struggle of someone else.
No.
And it doesn't, kind of what you were saying was sort of the standard of maybe the hyper-masculinity in terms of people feeling like they have to put on this display of nothing bothers me. Mm-hmm. There are some of those people who aren't as bothered by certain issues. Everybody has their own level that things impact them.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think the thing that's kind of the most important about it is, are you doing something to try and improve your situation? Are you trying to work on it? And if not, why not?
Yeah.
If you value your time, if you value your time on this earth, if you value the experiences that you get to have, what's stopping you? And I think that it helps some people when you see someone else who maybe is succeeding in the field that you're interested in or whatever you're passionate about. If everybody always says, you know, if they're only showing off the parts that are the highlight reel,
yeah,
it becomes really difficult, and it actually spreads that gap of, will I ever be able to achieve my own hopes and dreams? And I think that it's almost just dishonest for someone to pretend like everything is perfect all the time. And I don't think I could do that. I don't think that I could kind of handle the weight of putting on that show all the time. Where I think it is freeing, and it's kind of a release of saying, I'm just a person. I'm flawed. I have things that I struggle with. I'm working on them, so I don't have to feel bad that I have weaknesses. It marks me as human, and I don't think there's any superior. If someone's, I've heard the arguments that are the example before that, in terms of like morality or someone overcoming, a person who has no evil within them, who has no darkness, who has nothing that they have to overcome, if they are, that's not a moral person. That's a naive person.
Yeah.
A moral person is someone who can recognize that they have something within them that is bad or dark or is the opposite of what they want to be, and they can recognize it and they rise above it. That is more impressive to me than someone who just has nothing that they're challenged by. The challenge is what makes the hero in any story. So
exactly, yeah. And I think you're 100% right there in that I feel like no matter the issue, so I will always say to people is you could have something really, really huge in your life that you find really challenging. So let's take you and I, for example. Like, you could find something really, really easy, and I could find it really challenging. So I wouldn't say to someone that, oh, just because like Ben finds it easy, then it's not a big deal. Like, I'm never going to discredit that in someone, because like you said, everybody has like a tolerance. Everyone has a tolerance to physical pain, but everyone has a tolerance to mental pain at the same time, I feel, in that you have to have compassion towards others in order to appreciate. I'm not saying like you have to have gone through what people have gone through or experienced what people are experiencing, but in order to help or in order to even understand, I think compassion comes into play there. Like, you may not understand what someone's going through, but you can be compassionate towards that person and think, well, actually, I might be able to help that person, or that must be really hard on them. And I feel like that's something that, unfortunately, with mental health is still like a big stigma. I mean, I talk a lot about mental health. Obviously, powerlifting I use as a platform because I find it very relatable, and I think a lot of people do. But I made a video last year talking about being sexually abused when I was 6 years old, being bullied most of my life. And you saying earlier about it being freeing, like, that is probably the most free I've ever felt. And to this day, I feel myself getting better every single day because I'm not trying to lie to people. Now, social media, like you mentioned, it's a highlight reel for people. People are going to see the best of a person that they look up to. And especially in fitness, we know that they create unrealistic expectations in mainstream fitness. So I think if you've got somebody like yourself that is very well known name in powerlifting, and someone can look up to them and be like, actually, do you know what? No, Ben struggles with that. It's okay, like, and he talks about it, so it's okay for me to talk about it. I feel like you've got such a fantastic platform, and I love the fact that you are talking, because it's creating opportunities for other people that maybe didn't feel like they could.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that I try to kind of have my foundation in terms of the things that I continue to talk about is the idea of building things like mental resilience and physical resilience. But when you're working on building those, it's because it wasn't there before. It hasn't always been there. It's not always super intuitive. And again, the struggle is no one cares if someone has achieved and never dealt with any kind of adversity. And you don't care if you achieve something without dealing with adversity. If it was truly easy for you, then it is not fulfilling. The struggle shapes the success, because the fulfillment and any kind of positive, the internal reward system you have from any particular pursuit is based off of how hard you had to work and what you had to overcome to do that. And so I've had a couple videos in the past where things like the ideas of celebrating when you find a weakness, when you find something, instead of lamenting and talking about how, oh, because of this thing I cannot do, maybe say, I found this thing, which means now I can work on it.
Yeah.
And it's not always easy to do that. And it usually is not easy to do that, to be honest. It's a majority of the time finding something like that is usually, it can be devastating. And like you were saying, if you've had things in the past that are truly horrific things, feeling like you're having to pretend like that wasn't the case isn't helpful for growth. It's not, and like we were talking about with the things that are in your mind, you can't just pretend like something isn't there if it is.
Yeah.
It's non-productive and it's not helpful to just act like something isn't there. But through practice and training and working through those things, it becomes more possible to live the life that you want to live while that is still there. To have it in your mind and to be able to recognize and say, yep, you're still there, but today I'm going to go this way and I'm going to fill my time and put my effort into the things that make me feel better. And this is going to be the thing that is going to shape the positive feelings that I have when I'm successful at achieving one of my goals. It doesn't necessarily have to be I won the thing or I did the thing, but to see the fruits of my labor and my effort turning into some sort of growth forward.
Yeah.
Ends up those negative things end up becoming where your fulfillment is based off of.
Absolutely. And I think for me personally, like as me as an individual, all of my strength that I have comes from all of that struggle that I've had to endure. And it's always incredible to me because, like you mentioned earlier, you said that you fight these things every day. And I think the thing with mental illness, why people might not necessarily, I'm not going to say believe in it, but they might not maybe acknowledge it. I don't even know if that's the right word, but there's still this stigma is what I'm trying to say. And it's because people don't, they physically can't understand it because they haven't had to go through it. And
right.
It's like you said, you get that fulfillment from those weaknesses. Like if you, like I mentioned earlier, you find it very exhilarating when you kind of say something, it's very freeing. Like when I said that I needed to go to therapy because I needed help, that was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. But it was also the greatest moment of my life because that's the strongest thing I've ever had to do. I mean, I was hiding sexual abuse for 19 years and then to turn around and say, do you know what? No, I need help. And you mentioning where you might wake up the one day and feel a certain way and you're like, actually, no, today I'm going a different day. For me, I won't let my mental illness control me anymore. And I can't even begin to explain that feeling. It is the greatest feeling I've ever experienced. And I think I don't know, but for me, I've always enjoyed finding weaknesses. Maybe I'm just a little bit odd, but I enjoy finding the weaknesses because I then enjoy learning and I enjoy seeing where I can go and where I can develop. Like, if you consider yourself maybe like, if you imagine Lego when you were a child, like you keep building and building and building. I kind of see myself as like a big piece of Lego, I guess, or a Lego building. Mm-hmm. And every time I learn something new, something gets stronger and I add another piece. And then when I come to the end of my life, I'll just be like this building that has all these experiences and stuff like that. So that's a really weird way of putting it, but well, I hope you kind of get the sentiment.
No, I think the way that I would maybe try and kind of articulate that idea is the idea of it being a matter of perspective. Mm-hmm. When the excitement that you get from finding a weakness isn't necessarily that you found a weakness, it's that you're anticipating what will come from it because you've run into those before. You've run into something, and I think that's you know, with powerlifting, it is something that a lot of younger lifters who haven't really maybe gone through who haven't hit those walls yet, who haven't hit those plateaus, who haven't had to deal with their first injury. Mm. This sport has a fair amount of aches and pains, but there's usually along the road, if everything's always gone easily for you, the way to find out if you're ever going to get to your potential is how you react once you maybe get a little ahead of yourself, mm-hmm. have something that halts the progress when you hit your wall, when you come up, when you're you know, maybe if you don't have as many inner demons, when you find that one that's been hiding because you've gotten kind of close enough to realizing your own potential in any one pursuit that you run into it, that is, if you've done it before, if you've gone through and been able to overcome before, then you tend to maybe have an easier time shifting your perspective to saying, I've been through this before, I can make it through again, which is, if anything, I think it's why it's important to maybe be a little bit more open, as you know, if you have a platform, if you have opportunity to share your process with other people, to help them find those perspectives before they run into that demon, if they haven't done it before, if they haven't run into that struggle before, to let them know that it's coming and here's how to deal with it.
Yeah.
Because once you hit that for the first time, it feels like you won't ever be able to be happy. The first breakup you have, the first injury you have, the first time that you, if you've been really kind of gifted at a young age and didn't have to work hard through school, then you hit university and all of a sudden they're like, no, you have to perform to move past this. And if you haven't built the skills to do that, then that's when it hits. That's when it hits. And so I try to help other people who maybe haven't run into their walls yet so that they're ready to deal with them when they hit, or if they're dealing with it now, trying to help them pass. I think that's where the idea of sharing, because otherwise I'm just videotaping myself lifting weights. That's a silly thing, but it becomes more when you have when you put value in it, and if someone else finds value from it, then it's worthwhile for me to share it. I hope that kind of helps to sort of tease out that idea a little bit more.
Yeah, that definitely made a hell of a lot more sense than a big Lego building.
Different ways.
Yeah, and you're so right in that I think it's fantastic that you've just mentioned that you're willing to help those people almost kind of preempt what's coming, because it is going to happen to all of us at some point. And I think that's where I enjoy these little small victories. So obviously, like when you first start powerlifting and you hit a PR every session or every week or whatever it is, that's an amazing feeling. But as you start to get into it more and more, you might like do a squat that doesn't hurt quite as much because you've got hip pain, or whatever the case might be. Like, you find little victories in things, and I think that's really, really important, is finding those, even just not just in powerlifting but just in life in general. And as cliche as it sounds, is finding those little things and allowing yourself to celebrate the little victories. I'm not saying like you go out drinking because you've done something, but what I'm saying is you acknowledge that you've actually done something good, or that you've done something that challenged you, even the tiniest bit, and then you allow yourself to feel a sense of pride or a little sense of happiness because you've achieved that. Go on.
No, please, interrupted you.
All I was going to say was, I think as society, we kind of, like, we see all of these people doing such amazing things on a day-to-day basis on social media that the little things kind of become less important, so to speak, in people's eyes, in that, oh, it's not such a big thing, so it's not really that important, when in fact those are crucial to your development as a person.
Yeah, I think maybe one of the ways I like to think of it is recognizing that it's okay to find contentment without it necessarily being complacency. There's been kind of a, I'm torn on some social movements in terms of kind of my approach, but things like the idea of loving yourself and body acceptance, I'm a big fan of loving yourself and being content if you are happy, if you're truly happy with your situation. But I think it's also important to recognize that you can still love yourself and want to seek growth and seek improvement in those situations. And I think that's where the two sides clash on some of these issues, where there have been a push of someone saying, well, you shouldn't love yourself or be happy unless you're this certain way. And someone else will say, but I want to be happy, and I'm not interested in doing that thing. And how do you reconcile those? Well, first of all, one person's goals or dreams or aspirations or interests may be completely different and varied from someone else's goals and dreams and aspirations. I don't watch, I think I've brought this up in every podcast that I've ever done, and it's always kind of a silly thing. I don't tend to watch a whole lot of sports. Mm-hmm. I watch esports. I am fascinated with video game performance at a high level. I don't even play the games myself that I watch. I just watch other people do them.
Okay.
And it's one of those things where I've seen people in my field, in the fitness field, say, like, well, that's not a real sport because they're not doing something physical. Mm. That doesn't take away from my enjoyment of watching it or my respect for the people who have gotten to the highest level of that thing.
Yeah.
Just because it's a different pursuit or a different interest than the one that I've chosen, I can understand. And then there's maybe some other examples where I'm not as personally interested, but I can recognize that there can be validity in what they're doing, mm-hmm. because I've recognized within myself that I am ascribing the value. There's not the intrinsic value of lifting weights the way that I do. It's past the point of being kind of a healthy outlet of physical exercise, because we are pushing to the extreme of something where it becomes imbalanced. It's mm-hmm. it's past the point of a balanced exercise regimen. It's kind of beating yourself up to do this thing. I have to put the value in that myself. And so if I recognize that I care about the things that I care about because I framed them in this way that it makes sense for me, maybe I can appreciate what someone else is doing a little bit more and recognize that there is value to them and what they are doing. And so maybe it makes me a little bit more patient or more kind when thinking of one of those people, but then also kind of recognizing that you can love yourself and you can love what you do, but it's also can be a healthy thing. It is not, you're not giving up on your self-love, mm-hmm. if you're also trying to improve. And finding that balance of not trying to drive your progress through like self-hatred and negative emotions. Because some people fall into that. They say, well, I get more work mm-hmm. done if I'm busy hating myself enough that I have to get better. Well, what if you learned that it's okay to find some of that happiness and find some of that joy and contentment in your situation, so that you're not in this negative space that's toxic, constantly going to be pulling you down and challenging your kind of mental recovery, almost mm-hmm. like a physical workout. Is it possible for you to try and find contentment, to celebrate those little victories and still seek growth and improvement? It doesn't take away from your ability to continue to grow, to find contentment in your situation and to recognize some of those positive things. You'll feel better, and you will probably have an easier time improving when you have that.
Absolutely. I mean, you're so right there. And I fell victim to that, in that I spent a lot of years hating myself, up until the last couple of years, really. Hating the way I looked, hating who I was. And it's just a whole bunch of things that happen. But touching back on the thing that you said about the mental thing kind of bringing you down, if you surround yourself in that, like, you're in your own head, if you create that negative environment, I think people misunderstand how exhausting it is having to fight those demons, those mental demons. It is physically exhausting. Like, there's days where I've been going through therapy and suffering with depression and stuff where I just don't want to get out of bed because I am so damn tired and I haven't even done anything. But it's very difficult for people to kind of comprehend, and I completely understand that. So one of the things I wanted to ask you about, Ben, is that mental exhaustion, we'll say. I always find it fascinating because you get a lot of people who suffer with depression, mental illness, whatever it is, and they might struggle to get out of bed sometimes. And I understand why they do. But at the same time, like, if you're having a day where you might be struggling, you're able to kind of, like, get out of bed, for example, and pull, let's say, 600 pounds plus, like, that's incredible. So is that just because you have this love for powerlifting and you have this love for progression, like you discussed earlier, that you can be having a bad day and you can be like, no, my workout is like my guaranteed thing in my day, that's definitely going to happen? How do you kind of go from having those struggles to being able to pull such be able to do such amazing things physically, sorry, is what I was trying to say.
Well, first off, I would say that in terms of, I would never want to discount someone's struggle, right? I would never say that I can do it, so you can too, kind of a thing. Because we talked about, there's there's the difference of how people, different people cope with different things. Everyone's journey may be at a different point, even if it's in the same pursuit angle, what they're trying to, with what they're passionate about and trying to do. One of the things that I find interesting is kind of at least anxiety. Depression is a different anxiety and depression would be classified as different mm-hmm. types of feelings.
Yeah.
And I would definitely struggle more with the anxiety aspect than necessarily depression. I've experienced depressive states before. But in those kinds of instances, maybe trying to some things that may be helpful, recognizing why certain things are happening, where a lot of times, at least with anxiety, it's kind of messing with your chemical makeup in your brain, where maybe you're kind of engaged with this overwhelming sensation of your fight or flight isn't turning off. You're not getting a break from those responses.
Yeah.
And it's not usually, I mean, it's kind of a misnomer to say fight or flight, because it's fight, flight, or freeze.
Mm-hmm.
When you scare an animal, sometimes they'll just stand there and not be able to move. It's yeah. that it kind of can happen to people. And I think that one of the key differences that I've maybe my when I do have those days where I don't feel like doing anything, it's not because I am. It's not because I'm just more able than someone else. I would say it's been a process of prioritization, a process of actively working on building the mental resilience. If it's a skill, it's something that you work on and can develop. And it doesn't necessarily mean it's always going to be amazing, but it's something that wherever you're at, again, everyone has different kind of a different baseline, but it's something that can be worked on. And for me, that comes through specific and intentional training of mindfulness training, of meditation, of daily practices, of working on things to improve my own mental resilience, so that when I need it, I have a little bit more of an opportunity to do that. It doesn't mean it always works. There are certainly days that you have a plan, you have a goal, and you need to go get it done, and it doesn't get done.
Yeah.
But it when you have those days, it again comes back to some of the stuff we were talking about of how are you managing your expectations? Can you be reflective and honest with yourself while still being able to forgive yourself for only being a person? One of my something I saw a little while ago that I really enjoyed is make sure that every night before you go to bed, forgive yourself for being human and not being able to do everything. Mm-hmm. And then every morning, try and make the commitment to working on yourself again. And it's always going on, and it can be exhausting, but it can be improved through practice and through time. And in the cases of things like clinical depression and anxiety, through seeking medical help. And there are, you know, there are medications that can help with those kinds of things. And I think that one of the big stigmas is that people say, well, you should just be able to get over it without help. And that's just someone misunderstanding the reality of the situation. We're talking about chemicals in the brain and chemicals within your body that are like having these biological measurable effects.
Yeah.
That it's simpler than just, well, suck it up and do it. That doesn't always work.
No, absolutely. And it's amazing, isn't it, how it still baffles me to this day how you can have somebody just kind of look at you and your situation like you've just discussed and kind of say, well, just get on with it. Like, do you not think that if I could just get on with it, I would just be getting on with it? Like, I'm not doing this by choice. And I think that's one of the things that I find quite frustrating. But I appreciate at the same time that it's a lack of understanding on some people's part. But it is just that it's almost as if people assume that you put yourself in this situation because you want to be there. Like, I don't want anxiety. I don't want to go outside and be scared to see people. I don't want depression. I didn't want to be sexually abused when I was younger. These things, I didn't ask for any of this, but it happens, and then you kind of learn to combat it. But I think, for me, one of the most exciting things, again, like I mentioned, is kind of that learning curve where, so you discussed just, so with mindfulness, for example, that's something I've been practicing as of late, and it's something I'm learning. But then as you learn that, you kind of learn something else, which then benefits something else in your life. And I think it's like a tree, isn't it? It just kind of keeps branching out, and you just keep adding all these branches, which is just, it just kind of makes life easier for you. It just kind of makes the day-to-day things much more tolerable. And then over time, things just become a lot easier. But it does take time. These things don't happen overnight. Like if you pull in 700 pounds plus, like you didn't wake up one morning and that happened. Yeah, everything takes time in life.
I would almost say one of the things that I think we reflexively say it, but maybe it's not as maybe it could be a little bit more, instead of saying something gets easier, because the thing probably didn't get easier.
No.
But what probably happened is you probably got better at dealing with it, or you probably became more capable of doing that. When I deadlift, this is related. When I deadlift, I deadlift with the hook grip, which a lot of people, anybody who's tried it, it's where the thumb is underneath the fingers instead of around, both your hands are facing forward. It helps you to keep hold of the bar a little bit better, but all of the pressure of whatever weight's on the bar goes directly into the thumb. And it's described by most people, if you've never tried it, as being incredibly painful.
Yes.
and so when people ask me, Ben, does it ever stop hurting? My answer is, oh, no, you just get more used to it. You get better at dealing with it. It doesn't have the same impact, or it doesn't force the same reaction in you. It's the same thing when people look and they say, getting under a heavy squat, if it's relative to your max, if it's the most weight that you can handle, that is never not uncomfortable. It's sorry for the double negative. It's always uncomfortable to do that.
Yes, absolutely.
But your ability to cope with that discomfort is something that develops through time with practice. And I think that's where people really struggle the most with a lot of these things, is they're not patient enough with themselves. They get into that negative feedback loop of, I'm not able to do it yet. Maybe not yet. Maybe someone else was able to do it a little bit quicker. What can you do?
Yeah.
What can you do with yourself? That's kind of that self-forgiveness aspect. And all these tools, the mindfulness, the meditation, being able to practice self-forgiveness and critical thinking in a healthy way that allows you to do self-analysis and to correct behaviors that you want to improve to benefit you. How can you do that in a way that's going to be healthy and beneficial and actually move you forward? These are all tools. I like the idea of these branches. It's building up this bigger thing, but you can go to each one of those branches, or think of it like tools in a toolkit, where you're saying, I have more tools to combat this thing. The thing didn't get easier. The thing didn't become simpler or less complicated or less of this horrible monster, but I armed myself with these other tools to maybe be able to combat it and have a little bit less suffering as a result of it.
Yeah.
Maybe.
No, I think you're 100% right. And I think I need to get out of the habit of saying it, and I think a lot of other people do as well, is saying that things become easier. Because you're right in that it doesn't become easier at all. The thing is still just as scary as it ever was, but you as a person, you become stronger because you, like you said, you kind of develop your toolkit, your mental resilience might go up, all these different things, all these different factors come into it. So you're then ready to accept that challenge. I guess kind of like going back to that gaming thing that you mentioned, where, this is going way back to childhood, but like, you might meet a boss on a level, for example, you might not be quite ready for that. But as you go back, you kind of get better as a character, you come back, and then you're able to combat it. And in a really kind of crude and raw way of describing that, I think it's also quite relatable for people in that you just have to get stronger. You have to learn things and you have to add things to your arsenal in order to combat certain things. And
right.
You're always going to experience, like that expression, there's always a bigger fish. Like the thing that you deal with today, something 10 times more difficult might come along tomorrow. But then you go back to the drawing board, you do exactly the same thing, and you develop those things that you need in order to combat that. And that's just the way life works, isn't it? It's the way powerlifting works. It's the way everything works.
Well, and sometimes you run into that bigger fish right now, and you haven't gotten the other one out of the way first. So maybe the approach is, I got a little ahead of myself. Maybe I need to take a couple of steps backwards and work on what I can work on right now. The expression that I've come to use, I'm quoting it from Jordan Peterson, is maybe you should clean up your own room first. Yeah. The idea of if you set this goal of, okay, today I'm going to clean up the house. Have you been able to keep your room clean? No? Focus on that. Why don't you tidy up this little bit of stuff that you have right here first? Why don't you, instead of trying to tackle this goal that you're almost certainly not able to handle yet, mm-hmm. how about we just focus on this little thing today and then find some of that contentment? I did a thing. I did the thing, and maybe I'm a little bit more capable the next time of, all right, well, I did this thing. All right, well, I can do this thing. Yeah. And before you know it, probably not before you know it, and with time, you've cleaned up enough of your space where you're able to move on to other things. And you can think of that in terms of kind of a metaphor for the rest of your life. When you have this huge thing that seems like you can't overcome it, maybe you can't yet. Maybe what you can do is to target some of the little things that are bugging you and start with the things that are actually achievable for your level right now and develop some of that kind of positive feeling of, I did something. My goal was not, my expectations weren't so big that I had no chance of matching them in my reality. My expectations were small enough that it was feasible for me to build some of that and to get some of that, instead of hitting that, trying to take out that big fish or take out that big boss, maybe you got to go back and grind out a few levels first. Maybe you have to build yourself up with some smaller tasks and kind of segment the goal up a little bit. That's been absolutely huge for me in terms of being productive and being consistent and conscientious about following through with some of these ideas I have, where if I say, well, I got all this stuff I have to do. Well, that's not helping me get started on it. What if I say, well, I'm going to spend 10 minutes starting this one thing, mm-hmm. and then I'm going to work on it for this amount of time, and then I'm going to give myself the option that if I want to keep working, I can, but if not, then I did something. Yeah. When I got to the end of the day, am I closer to where I want to be than when I started the day? Because if I am, then I made progress today. If I'm not, okay, I need to adjust something and try maybe a different approach tomorrow. But for tonight, I'm going to forgive myself, and then I'll wake up and recommit to that kind of a thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess you kind of still get that progress, don't you, there in realizing that today you didn't make progress, but you have to go back and adjust. So you're kind of still making progress, just a really small amount, I guess, in comparison. But yeah. I think
perspective, again, it's that perspective is very powerful, and exactly. that it can shape how you view it.
Exactly. And it's funny, somebody asked me recently, I was doing a heavy squat day, and this lady said to me, she was like, what does that feel like on your back? And I said, well, what's the heaviest you've ever squatted? And she answered, and I said, did that hurt? And she said, yeah. And I said, well, it feels exactly the same as that. Because, so, I mean, you could take, you, let's say, a 700-pound squat to my, what, like 450 or so. They're probably going to feel, I'm not going to say exactly the same, but relatively speaking, that's what I'm trying to say. Yeah, they're going to feel the same because that is my true max. That might be your true max. So it's just about developing. And then as I get stronger and you get stronger, that becomes easier. But then that new max is still just as strong as the last max. And I love that. I find it fascinating. So I think going back to that kind of overwhelming thing you were just discussing, I'm not a big fan of New Year's resolutions. In fact, I despise New Year's resolutions. And the reason being is not because I don't like all the people that come to the gym. I think that's amazing, because if you're willing to make that change, then you deserve all the credit in the world. But the issue I have is that people try to change their entire life overnight, and then 2 months down the line, it isn't happening anymore. And it's because they tried to do too much too soon, like you said. They met that bigger fish and they were like, wow, that's massive. I don't want to do that. So they just stop. And that's the thing that I find that a lot of people struggle with, is they commit to something, they get really excited about it, they kind of get like that new relationship type feeling where everything's really exciting, and then after a little while they're like, actually this is quite a lot of work, or there's a lot of things I need to be thinking about. So instead of breaking it down, they'll just be like, nah, I can't be bothered.
Well, because, and a lot of that is because it's relying on motivation,
yeah,
which I think is a great tool, but it's one of those tools that you don't have control over.
No.
Motivation, if you're reliant on motivation, or when you feel like doing something, that's this internal state, which can be beneficial, but it can also, when you take that away, if that's all you've had to go off of, you know, there's a reason that people struggle to stay on diets. It's because they don't feel like eating this way, or they don't feel like being hungry for this kind of a thing. And most real change can't be about when I feel motivated to do something. It can't be about finding the right time to do it. It has to be about making a conscious choice, mm-hmm. and a choice based off of the value of the decision that is leading to the person that you want to be, or the outcome that you want to achieve. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to like New Year's resolution, I've run into this too, where maybe the person that you want to be looks completely different, or they have different skill sets. For the idea of me trying to develop a morning routine and kind of front load my day is incredibly counterintuitive. It's a very big change for me, mm-hmm. to be working on this. My natural tendency is almost that of being nocturnal, where I start the day kind of slow and really zone in later at night. But I've actually been trying to make a very uncomfortable change in my life, because I view it as being the, you know, what kind of person do I want to be? Who's the person that I want to be? How would that person look?
Yeah.
And maybe something that can be helpful is to try and treat the way that you approach yourself with these kinds of goals with, imagine that you were trying to help someone that you loved very dearly, mm-hmm. instead, because we tend to be really not the best with dealing with ourselves and treating, because it's easy to get mad at yourself and to get down on yourself and almost to give up on yourself sometimes. But if you treat yourself like someone that you love dearly and want to see succeed, and you want to set up their life in a way that has them reach all their hopes and dreams, it might be a little bit more manageable to understand that kind of mental approach, mm-hmm. To treat yourself like someone you care about,
yeah,
and try to set up their life for them, that them being you, and then try and do that. It can tend to take a look. It helps with that perspective, because perspective is so powerful when choosing how to approach certain tasks, especially something that is as large, as big that final boss is, as big as that big fish of changing a fundamental part of your natural personality tendency, not because you're not good enough, but because the person that you would like to be maybe would go about things in a different way.
Yeah, and I think I loved the way you've just described that. I don't think you could have described it any more perfectly. It's funny, one of the things that I learned in therapy was, they have us develop all of these skills to then go on to one-to-one therapy. That was a bit of a mouthful. They help us develop skills to then be able to develop with individual therapy. But it's giving you, like we discussed earlier, it's giving you the tools to then be able to go and tackle that boss, essentially. So one of the things they've talked about was the perfect nurturer. But your perfect nurturer, so imagine what your perfect version of yourself would be. And then you kind of step back and you're like, okay, so what do I need to do to get there? I need to be able to do this. I need to be able to do this. And then you kind of step back from that again and you go, well, how do I get to that point? And then you just keep stepping back until you get to a point where you're physically able and prepared to make that first step. And then you continue on to the second step, the third step, and then you just continue to get there until you become that perfect version of yourself, which again, mm-hmm. I think is something that isn't really attainable, because we all have these things, like you said, you don't control your genetics, you don't control certain aspects of your life, but you can kind of work towards improving them. And I've found that very helpful.
Yeah, it's one thing to pursue perfection as the ideal, while also recognizing that it is unattainable. Mm-hmm. As long as you can kind of come to that understanding with yourself, and as long as you can, I'm thinking of a word, it starts with R, I can't think of it exactly. Maybe it'll come to me in a bit. The idea of coming to grips with these two different things, mm-hmm. and kind of understanding that these two ideas are sort of antithetical to each other, but at the same time, it still can be a healthy thing to pursue it, as long as it pushes growth, as long as you hold your perspective that you're not going to, that it's okay that you don't reach perfection because it's impossible.
Yeah.
To pursue it, to structure your life in a way that is striving for perfection, because maybe that'll help you kind of connect these ideas that we're often told. Practice makes perfect. Well, if perfection's impossible, then why even bother practicing? Well, that's not a helpful tool, right? Or if the approach that you're taking instead is one of saying, well, I know I can't get to perfect, but how close can I get?
Exactly.
Well, yeah. Let's find out. Let's try and give it my reconcile's the word I was thinking of. How do you reconcile these two ideas? Of something that you know is unattainable, but at the same time you're structuring your life in a way that is in pursuit of that for whatever you've chosen, and then within your own definition of what is perfect in that instance. But to constantly seek that growth, I think, is where the real fulfillment comes from.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think one of the things I always enjoyed when I played basketball was not the games. I didn't really enjoy them. I always enjoyed that kind of pursuit of making one more shot in practice or being able to run a little bit faster. Like I enjoy powerlifting meets, but if I never did one again, it wouldn't bother me. I enjoy the process of leading up to that. Like, I've always been a fan of that. And it's amazing, isn't it? The way everybody is so different. And I love that, because we all go about things in different ways. Like for me, my pursuit of perfection is I want to be able to talk to every single person in the world that has a mental illness and be able to help them and encourage them to talk. Now, I know that is physically impossible, but why shouldn't I try? I know that I'm not going to attain that, but it doesn't stop me from wanting to get as close as I can to reaching everybody, which is exactly what you've just said.
Yeah. If you understand and decide that my trying isn't going to leave me disappointed, mm-hmm. because I understand that I can't do everything, but I'm still going to do the best I can. And will I do more good by trying to chase this perfection and pursue it in a way that, am I able to do more good in my life? Am I able to, is it going to benefit me in the long run doing this? Mm. And am I able to reconcile those two ideas? Exactly, and I think that if you can, then yes, it's worth doing it. You're putting more good in the world, and you're helping people, and that's where that has ascribed value. That has a intrinsic value, as opposed to the ascribed value of this other, you know, whatever we choose to structure our lives around. Mm. Where does the value come from? Does the value come from the interactions that you have with other people and the way that happens? I think that powerlifting meets are. If the only thing you love about powerlifting is the meet, then just go to meets. Like, just don't try to compete. Just go and watch a meet or something. Because that's you're not going to have a good time if you don't love the process of the training. And I'm not saying that you enjoy necessarily every single aspect of that mm-hmm. process, but having a love, having love in terms of the context of a commitment to something, regardless of how you may feel in the moment, towards that pursuit or towards that thing, and then recognize that the meet is really just the opportunity for you to express and share the work that you've done. Yeah. That's really what it is. You're just sharing with the class what you've been working on as you know, kind of on your own. But the real growth and the real fulfillment comes from this. Because if you never trained and you just went to meets and did well, then you're not going to feel good about those meets.
And I think enjoying the process builds so much character. Like that process, like you mentioned, doing the things that you really don't want to do, that's what builds a person's character. And it's just adding another branch to that tree, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah, and enjoying in terms of recognizing that you get the most fulfillment from those things. Mm-hmm. Because I wouldn't want to push the same in terms of like, I just feel like a lot of people say like, oh, you just have to enjoy the process. And then if someone goes in, they have a training session and it wasn't fun for them, they might look at it as like, I don't enjoy this.
Yeah.
What's your perspective on enjoyment? Is your enjoyment tied to winning? Are you the kid that just put in all the cheat codes in the video game so that you could beat the boss without trying? Or were you the kid that got a sense of accomplishment from working to be able to achieve that thing? Because then you enjoyed the process, even if you didn't enjoy it in that moment, even if you didn't feel the sensation of excitement and didn't feel kind of the benefit of the success in the moment where you were preparing for it, that still, again, the struggle is going to shape that success.
Exactly. So, Ben, I have one final question for you, and I say it every single time. You'd think I'd get bored of saying it, but I never do. I ask the same question to every single guest that I have on the podcast, and every single person gives me a different interpretation, but they're all actually kind of similar, which fascinates me. So, let's say we had an alien, someone that knew nothing about our language, and you had to describe what strength was, not dictionary definition, but your personal definition of strength. You had to define it to someone who didn't know. How would you go about doing so? How would you explain it?
I would say strength to me would be recognizing a task or something that seems too big and being able to accomplish it. That's strength. When in powerlifting, it's seeing a weight that is too much. It's too much. But with time and effort, you're able to build up this ability to move that thing with mentality or with mental resilience. It's seeing these parts of yourself that are overwhelming and they're too big and it's just too much, but with time you develop the ability to do it even though it was too much. It's mm-hmm. it's approaching the thing you can't and doing it anyway. That is strength to me.
I really like that. And you know what I find fascinating is a lot of the guests that I've had on are powerlifters, like world-class lifters. Not a single one has mentioned anything physical. And I think that's incredible. Because strength has to come from the mental side first before that physical strength grows. Like, because you can't commit to getting physically stronger without being mentally strong or having a certain level of mental strength. So, continue. Sorry, Ben.
I would say just recognizing that mental strength and physical, that there's a lot of times people separate them. They say that, mm-hmm. you know, the mind and the body, the mind, without the mind, the body isn't functioning, right? It doesn't move. It can't do. So that they are one and the same mm-hmm. in terms of there's the separation of that. It's these reactions that are caused within your brain that's causing things, and the kind of it is one thing. The mind is the body.
Absolutely. And I think it's funny, like we see strong people like yourself, people that are able to shift a lot of weight, but as well as those people, and for me you still come under this umbrella, is a strong person is just somebody, as you've just described what strength is, it's just somebody that is able to like tackle a situation. Just because someone isn't big, muscular, or anything of that nature, it doesn't mean that they're not a strong person by any means, because everyone is strong in something different. Again, it's perspective and it's all relative. So, Ben Rice, thank you so much for being on Born to Talk today.
Thank you. I appreciate having the talks.
Like I said, a lot of people requested this one, and I am sure that when they get to this point in the podcast, none of them will be leaving disappointed, because this was fantastic. And thank you for sharing about your demons, because that's never easy. So I without sounding really condescending, I commend you for that, because that takes a hell of a lot, and it really does take it out of someone. So thank you for that. And again, thank you for just spreading that wealth of knowledge that you have.
I'm trying my best. Thank you very much for the opportunity.